With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life, a life savings company for your journey to and through retirement.
Joined in studio now by our newspaper panel for the morning, Saoirse McHugh, environmentalist and campaigner, Tabitha Monaghan, political reporter with the Irish Independent and Indo Daily presenter. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning.
This Saturday before Christmas, and we're seeing that kind of smattered all over the papers. But Tabitha, I suppose one of the big ones that is in the papers this morning is Micheál Martin and his future after the week that was, the heave that wasn't, I suppose.
Exactly, the heave that wasn't. There was no smoking gun really in that review that maybe some might have anticipated there could be. They did get some level of detail, so they did get a chronological order of the events in relation to the selection and the process of arriving to Jim Gavin's name being the candidate. I suppose what we're looking at now is, where do we go from here? Where does Fianna Fáil go from here? Where does Micheál Martin go from here? So there's a number of different things that are in the papers today. One of them is in the Mail. Craig Hughes is writing, like, what exactly does Micheál Martin want now going forward? I would imagine that actually ideally is that this all goes away and we stop talking about it.
Yeah.
But there's a number of things that are coming up next year that I think, and some of us have already speculated on this throughout the saga, the Fianna Fáil saga as it's unfolded. We have the EU presidency that'll be coming up towards the kind of second half of next year. Ireland will be the centre stage of the EU, and it's a really important position to hold. And I think we know Micheál Martin really values the EU and really he puts a lot of emphasis on it and thinks it's incredibly valuable and how much Ireland has benefited from that. So I think that's something that he definitely wants to be a part of. You know, there's a huge amount of value on that. You also have the 100 years of Fianna Fáil in May. So you have the centenary celebrations. I think he's coming on, is it next month? It'll be 15 years of him as leader. And I think, as Craig says, his second longest only to Dev, who was 33 years.
So there's 18 more years if he wants.
No, 18 more years. But I think there's still, while there hasn't been a heave, and certainly the rebels didn't have the 12 names needed to put forward a motion of no confidence, never mind actually making it successful in the next stage of that, I think he's still on shaky ground. And while he could be safe for now, there's things that I think potentially will kind of rev it back up again. So the likes of housing figures, even though they don't have those annual targets next year, there's still going to be metrics for which we can measure the success of the government. But then we have two by-elections as well. And then obviously we know government parties never do very well in by-elections. If anything, it's a way for the electorate to punish them. And even we saw that in the presidential election as well. So I think if Fianna Fáil do really, really poorly in the by-election, you know, I think if they can come out reasonably well from it, it might be okay. But if they do very poorly, and if the housing figures aren't doing well, I think that's when the disgruntlement is going to start bubbling up again.
Saoirse, what have you made of what's been the biggest pantomime in the country in the Christmas season?
Well, I just, every time I reread a summary of it, I'm like, it's so amateur. Like, Fianna Fáil, the largest party in the state, the longest government party, serving government party in the state. It's remarkable. But I do have concerns. Like, obviously, I find myself very interested in the story and the politics of it. But I do think a lot of people are sick to their back teeth of hearing about it. Mm. And Richard Chambers was talking about this on the group chat. He was saying, you know, and Paul Hosford was writing about it today. He was talking about how this government has had so little legislation passed. And for a lot of people, you know, that is a metric of when you're not seeing your life improve day to day, legislation being passed is, you know, something is happening with the governments. And I do worry that maybe people are you know, getting tired enough to start just becoming more and more disillusioned with the government. Like Fianna Fáil is almost in Ireland like a byword for government. And I do think like with, you know, housing, as you were saying, healthcare, all these kind of things stagnating and not being made visibly better day to day. Like it's all well and good to look at the plan or the stats or something, but when people aren't feeling that, I do think there's a risk that, as Paul Hosford was saying, that, you know, apathy will start to creep in with people. And that actually links to another story, which is, we might get to that, about, you know, people believing less what they see online. And that the result of that, of course, is just people believing nothing and disengaging. And I do think we're at a very special time, or unique time maybe in politics internationally, where governments are at risk and we're all at risk of having, you know, fractured realities, where I see something online, you see something, you see an entirely different world online, and our politics is not keeping up with that. And I think Fianna Fáil would probably do well to just deal with this once and for all, just get rid of it somehow, and start moving on things that people actually care about. Like that can be rumbling on in the background, but I imagine people would want to see a bit more action on stuff that affects
them. A little bit.
Them.
And sometimes, and well, a lot of the time, Fianna Fáil's greatest enemy is Fianna Fáil and the people within it. You mentioned that story, and Tabitha, it's in the Examiner today. CSO saying 4 in 5 people have doubts over the accuracy of info they saw or read online in 2025. And that's up from 63%. So 63 to 80% in 2 years. And like, I think overall people won't be that surprised. I think people are a lot more sceptical. But to see that jump in a relatively short space of time is quite a lot.
It is. And so, like, yeah, like you said, 4 in 5 people have doubts about the accuracy, but it is that jump that is very significant. But when you think about some of the things that have been going on social media, one of the things that jumped out at me when I read this was that AI slop that is all over the place at the moment. Those videos that are everywhere, and you see a woman who's fallen into a lion's den or something in a zoo, and the lion ends up helping her and like bringing the cubs over, and you're like, my God, that's so special.
The thing about it is how many people send that to me going, this is amazing. This
I know.
And like, it's so easy to be taken in by it.
Completely. Yeah. And I think, yeah, that was one of the things, but you know, I think as Sean Murray wrote, it was only 76% of these people checked how true this information was. I actually thought 76% was quite high because of the level of misinformation, disinformation, fake videos that are out there. Who has the time of day to be checking absolutely everything that they're looking at? I don't.
No.
Even though there's like for work, I definitely have to. But day to day, if I'm just doom scrolling or I'm just looking through, you know, just trying to kill 5-10 minutes or whatever, I'm not going off and trying to figure out if every single thing that I've seen. I think it's knowing not to be passing it on as fact, or, you know, taking a minute and going, well, maybe I need to think about it. Other things that they were saying is, you know, one of the ways people do check is they seek alternative sources, but also figure out who the original posters were. So there are methods of doing it. It's just, it is time consuming, and it's just the onslaught of fake content out there. I just don't think people have the time for it.
And I don't know which is worse. Is it that people believe everything they see, or people believe nothing they see?
Yeah.
And so you then have, I have had several conversations with people and I'll say, well, this X, Y, Z. And they're like, that's fake. And I'm like, it's not.
Yeah.
And then of course, how do you know where, like I assume this is being taught in schools now. How do you even know? I've had a conversation recently with a relative who was saying, like, where do you even check what's real or not? Because how do you know that's real?
Yeah.
Like you can easily, oh, I can't. People who are good on computers can easily mock up news websites and stuff like that, or create posts that look like they came from a news website. And I do, yeah, I really worry about that because I find it, I feel it myself. I look at stuff and I'm like, oh, I couldn't be arsed checking. And I'm like, it's probably not real, probably not real. And you just, you become, yeah, completely open to, if you don't know what's real or not.
Well, it's easier, isn't it, to just say, no, well, this isn't real, and go on. It's just a shortcut. And that's what everybody's looking for these days, is shortcuts.
In a world where everything is fake, is anything real? You know, there's a whole lot of the more serious questions there. While we're talking about the more serious side, Saoirse, of the online discourse, and I know you've been no stranger to online hate in the past. We obviously saw that case this week involving the conviction in relation to Simon Harris, and he's done a bit of an interview with the Irish Examiner this morning.
Yeah, and it, like, you'd really feel for him and you'd really feel for his family. It must have been terrifying, especially because online, it could be anyone. And that's it. It could be someone you pass every single day. And I do think the kind of the bigger question in all of this is regulation of big tech. Now, I'm no expert in regulation of big tech, but these companies are so big. They have so much money. They have so much political influence that they cannot be continue to be led away with everything. Now, I don't particularly think removing privacy from people. Like, I don't think age verification, I don't think us sending in our IDs is necessarily the answer. But I do think that people who know a lot more about this than me, who are experts, like, these big tech companies have to be regulated. Like, it is too important in our lives, it's too influential in our lives for it just to still be treated the way it was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
When you only knew two people on Twitter and Twitter wasn't controlled by Elon Musk, one of the most powerful people in the world, who was very openly using it for their own political agenda. And this is, you know, one of the kind of the big questions about all these big tech companies is they're being used, they're being owned and being used openly to drive political agendas now. And while before we all, you know, you could see, okay, well, they've algorithms that push people a certain way. But now you have these owners like very clearly saying, and we will do X, Y, Z to drive people towards being more pro-US, to drive division, all of these things. And Ireland obviously has a really unique role in that because they're all here. We are a hub for, we're a vital hub in terms of big tech infrastructure. And I really think the government has to step up and do something because it will only get worse. People are so afraid for their kids online. And you talk to anyone, everyone I know, myself included, hates their relationship with their phone. It's very rare you meet someone who's like, oh, I'd love to spend more time on my phone.
Yeah.
God, I wish I spent more time on Instagram. You don't. Like, I was talking to two women last night who were like, I'm going to try and take up cross stitch or knitting just to get myself off my phone. Because they're designed as well. These companies design these platforms to addict you.
Yeah. I found myself doing it last night and it's incredibly frustrating where we were sitting down, we were watching Elf, actually, a Christmas movie. We'll be talking about that with John Faraday in a little bit. And I was having a good time and enjoying it, and yet I still felt my hand was being drawn towards the phone. I was like, I'll just do a little scroll while I'm doing this.
It's awful. No,
like it's really properly an addiction.
Yeah. It is, yeah. But I think picking up what Saoirse is saying there needs to be the political will to make any change. I think we're starting to see that a little bit more, particularly in the last year, that there is a want to do something. Now, whether or not they go whole hog, let's say, and introduce a ban like Australia did for under 16s, I think that'll be closely watched to see what's going on. But I think just picking up on what Simon Harris said in that piece, that he was also glad that the Gardaí and the courts were taking the threat seriously, which I think is the other side of that. So yes, we need to regulate social media and big tech far more than we do, and Ireland does play a key role in that. But on the flip side, when people do misuse social media platforms and do send threatening messages to anybody, that, you know, politician or otherwise, that we do see the Gardaí taking it seriously, that we do see the courts taking it seriously, and that it isn't just dismissed. And I think with this particular story, we saw a Dublin woman getting 6 months of a prison sentence for messages that she sent, and they were really serious messages. I hope somebody does something to your family. Like, that's horrific for anybody to get, politician or otherwise. So I think seeing somebody get a prison sentence, you hope that either the more that happens, which you do hope, you know, as those threats continue to come in, the more it acts as a disincentive for doing that.
Yeah, and sorry, I just want to come back on that. Like, I don't know this woman's particular, like, what happened, how she got to this, but there's also a point of the radicalization that does happen on social media as well. So, like, yes, I think people, Gardaí should definitely take it seriously, these online threats and stuff, but just people going to prison, if that just kept happening without pushing further. Now, maybe there is no, she wasn't radicalized online, but that is huge. And that has caused, it has caused death in other countries, and it has been directly linked back to social media companies allowing this radicalization online.
Yeah, and I think she had described it as 3 minutes of madness in the court, which is, you know, I suppose people can relate to that a little bit, in that you just have a rush of blood to the head and then
you're watching Elf and you're
just like going for the phone to rage tweet. To end on something much lighter and happier, the Christmas number one in the UK has been revealed. Take a listen. Saoirse, are you laughing with joy or with a bit of disgust? I don't know.
Kylie's great. I am so happy for her. After 37 years, couldn't happen to a better woman. So I'm happy for
it. So you'll put up with
it. I've never heard it, yeah. But I'm obviously just not trendy enough to be up on what the number one song is.
I hadn't heard it either. Do you, Dan?
That was the first time I've heard that song. I've never heard that. And we were even trying to figure out, what is she spelling there?
Yeah.
Grand. I'll have to think about it a few more, or listen to it a few more times before I give my own verdict on that. But it's interesting how they determine the number one, particularly over in the UK. So obviously because of how we consume music has changed so much. It used to be just physical sales, but now it has to be physical sales, downloads and streaming. But they have to use a formula. This is over in the UK anyway, to use a formula to determine how many streams equals buying a physical copy, which obviously is definitely not the same. Buying a CD or buying anything is a big commitment. So 100 premium streams or 600 free streams equals one single purchase.
Oh, wow.
And that's how you, that's how they mark it up. So over in the UK, obviously Kylie won, but Wham won in 2023 and 2024, which was a big one. So they were wondering, will they get to the third?
Three with a song that's 40 odd years old?
I know, but well earned though. I mean, you know, after 39 years when they were denied it, and it was because Do They Know It's Christmas came in just towards the end. And took it from them in the end, and it was really looking like it was going to be number one when it was released.
Right, there you go. There's your
it's a great documentary on Netflix. Yeah. I didn't
coming soon on Indo Daily. Tabitha Monaghan, thanks so much for joining us. Saoirse McHugh, thanks so much for coming in. Have a great Christmas.
Really appreciate it.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.